a spirited and sometimes even tense debate between President Obama and Governor Romney at Hofstra University in New York. This is special coverage of the second presidential debate from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. President Obama, perhaps with a nod to his weak performance 2 weeks ago, came out swinging. But Governor Romney was also on the offensive tonight. Right at the start, the two candidates directly confronted each other. They talked, of course, about the economy and taxes, but also about energy policy, gun control, and the attack on U.S. diplomats in Libya. Much of the debate focused on litigating the past 4 years rather than describing plans for the next 4 years. Mitt Romney's campaign received a boost after the first debate. Did he repeat that tonight? In just a few moments, fact-checking and analysis from our team here in Washington and at the debate site in New York. You can also join the conversation online at npr.org. Stay with us. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. From NPR News, you're listening to special coverage of the debate between President Barack Obama and Governor Mitt Romney. I'm Guy Raz. For the next, 20 minutes or so, we're going to discuss the debate with our political team here in Washington and in New York. And we'll also check in with our correspondents on issues from health care, foreign policy, and the economy. I'm joined in the studio by senior Washington editor Ron Elving and also NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Also with us are E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon. And at the debate site in Hempstead, New York, is NPR's Don Gagne, who we will begin with. Don, a much different meeting between these two candidates than the first debate.
Absolutely. One of the things people in advance said about the town hall style format is that it's harder for candidates to go after one another with all these regular people kind of sitting around the stage so close. Well, they went after each other.
Indeed,
It wasn't exactly a cage match, but this was really, really, really aggressive on both sides and quite lively.
Let me go to Mara Liasson here in the studio. The president was widely panned for his performance the first time around. Mara, how do you assess his performance this time around?
Well, he was certainly alive. You know, all the focus before the first debate was on Romney because he had the bigger hill to climb. He had to do something. He was on the verge of losing. He did do something. The president really whiffed the first encounter. On this one, all the attention was on the president. What was he going to do to come back, to reverse the momentum that Romney had gained from his commanding, dominating performance in the first in Denver? I think the president did what he had to do. He was aggressive. He called out Romney many times. He was vigorous. He was alive. He was smiling. He looked like he was happy to be there. The complete contrast to Denver. What he didn't do was talk about the next 4 years, which is something that a chorus of Democrats have been imploring him to do. He defended his term in office. He pointed out differences. He stuck to the kind of choice strategy template that his campaign has run all along, talking about how terrible it would be if Romney was the president. I think he did what he needed to do tonight, and I think, EJ will tell us, that I think Democrats are heaving a sigh of relief. Whether how exactly this is seen by the voters, whether it staunches the bleeding, changes the dynamic of the trends in the polls, I don't know. But I think this is what Democrats were looking for, and they got it.
Ron Elving, your reactions?
Both sides, I think, had a lot to cheer tonight, and both sides will cheer, I'm sure, in the next hour or so, in the days to come, quite loudly for their respective champions. I thought Mitt Romney did well again tonight, but was not as dominant as he was in the first go-round, and the president, unlike October 3rd, was regularly finding his third gear. He seemed stuck in second gear, sometimes even in first gear, in that first debate. Tonight, we saw some flashes of the Obama that we had seen at times in the past.
E.J. Dionne?
Very early in the debate, I tweeted the word sigh of relief for Obama land. I thought there's no doubt that that happened, Mara. But Obama needed to be engaged and on offense. He was. He needed to remind viewers of Romney positions that were unpopular, which he didn't do last week. He did that this week. He had energy, and he actually seemed to enjoy himself, which he clearly didn't do last week. Romney had his moments. Particularly on the Bush answering, how are you different from George W. Bush? But I thought that whereas last week he seemed utterly at ease, this week he seemed ill at ease and at times impatient. His interruptions going after the moderator, which seemed to work okay against Jim Lehrer, seemed not to work as well against Candy Crowley. And lastly, I think Candy Crowley did a very good job, and I was very glad she occasionally served as a fact checker, because facts actually should matter in these debates.
Matt Continetti, your impressions?
Well, speaking of fact-checking, I have a Matt Continetti fact-check. At one point, the president said that the Statue of Liberty is a few miles away from Hofstra University. And according to my Chinese manufactured phone, the Statue of Liberty is actually 32.6 miles away from Hofstra University.
We know that.
So you can all make up your own mind
yes.
for the record. Yes.
Depends.
Also, this
Bill
another fact that matters. I believe this was the first presidential debate in the history of presidential debate since 1960 in which the word gangbangers was used. By the president when describing immigration policy. Overall thoughts, I think this was a draw. I think both sides aren't going to get much. Now, the question for Obama is, momentum has shifted since October 3rd in Romney's direction. Is a draw enough? And I don't think it is.
Mm. Matt Connetti, EJ, Ron, and Mara, stand by. Let's go to some of our reporters who've been watching the debates as well. One of the first issues that came up was energy policy. There was quite a tense sort of exchange between the president and Governor Romney over the issue of drilling on federal land. Let's bring in Jeff Brady, who joins us now from Philadelphia. Jeff, let's talk about one of the charges that Romney made. He argued that oil and natural gas production on federal lands and offshore drilling is actually down under President Obama. Is that true?
It is technically down, and I don't know if you want to hear that. They actually had this interesting back and forth between the two men where they kind of argued over that. Do you want to hear that
Let's take a listen to that audio.
If you want to drill on public lands, you use it or you lose it.
Okay. Now
and so what we did was take away those leases, and we are now reletting them so that we can actually make a
production,
profit.
And production on private on government land is
up.
Down.
No, it isn't.
Production on government land of oil is down 14%.
Governor,
and production on gas is down 9%.
It's just not true.
It's absolutely true. Mm.
That was quite a tense moment.
It was. And, you know, technically it is true that production for federal land and offshore is down. It was down about 14% last year. Republicans in the oil industry have hammered that statistic for months as evidence that the president's energy policies aren't working. But as with a lot of things in the political world, there's a bit more to the statistic. Much of the federal production comes from the Gulf of Mexico. And you'll remember that in 2010, there was the Deepwater Horizon accident and oil spill. There was a drilling moratorium that was put in place while the government sort of overhauled the regulations for offshore drilling. And that's where much of that production decline comes from. So whether you think the moratorium was fair really depends on where you come from. Clearly, the folks in the oil industry hated the moratorium, and they had to keep a lot of people on the payroll without bringing in revenue. And I heard folks within the oil industry telling me this is definitely going to be an issue in the campaign, and here it is.
Jeff, let's go to very briefly a question that the president was asked about gas prices. One of the questioners early on said, why hasn't your energy department brought down gas prices? Can a presidential administration actually do that?
You know, there can be some effect with policies. I mean, if the president came out tomorrow and said, I'm going to release a whole bunch of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, that would send oil prices down for a time. But you can oversimplify that. Gas prices were so cheap in 2008, under $2 a gallon, because the economy had pretty much collapsed and demand was way down. And now the economy has rebounded a bit and demand is back up and world demand is definitely back up. So really, unless a president can go out there and convince people in places like China and India to use less oil, then he doesn't have a huge amount of control over prices these days.
That's NPR's Jeff Brady in Philadelphia. Jeff, thanks.
Thank you.
Also tonight, a major topic of discussion, of course, was taxes, whether to bring down the rates or not. Let's hear what Governor Romney said about his plan.
I want to bring the rates down. I want to simplify the tax code, and I want to get middle-income taxpayers to have lower taxes.
The president accused Romney of not making the math add up. Let's bring in NPR's John Idstey to help sort this out. John, did Governor Romney make it clear how he would make his tax cut add up?
No, once again, Governor Romney avoided giving any specifics about how he'd pay for his 20% cut in rates. A study by the Tax Policy Center, a well-respected think tank, found that, in fact, if Governor Romney wanted to meet his goals of reducing rates by 20%, not increasing the deficit, that he'd actually likely end up raising taxes on the middle class by an average of about $500 a year. Now, tonight, Governor Romney again suggested he would pay for his plan by capping deductions. In the first debate, he suggested he'd cap them at $17,000 per taxpayer. Tonight, he suggested $25,000. But it's not clear that would save $5 trillion that Governor Romney's tax cut plan would cost, and his campaign hasn't showed us how it would do that.
John, there was an argument between the two candidates over Detroit, whether the president led it to bankruptcy or rescued it from bankruptcy, and whether Romney's plan was similar or not. What was true and what wasn't?
Well, the president charged that Romney had said that the GM and Chrysler should just go bankrupt. Romney said, well, the president actually took them bankrupt, The thing is that Mr. Romney said they should go through Chapter 11 bankruptcy, but there were no investors out there to inject money into the companies during that period of time that would have kept them open. That's why the government came in and injected billions of dollars.
That's NPR's John Idstey helping us sort out the tax questions tonight. John, thanks.
You're welcome.
Let's turn now to foreign policy, the question of what happened in Libya when those diplomats were killed just a few weeks ago came up. Here is what the president said when Governor Romney accused him of not addressing the attacks seriously enough.
I stood in the Rose Garden and I told the American people and the world that we are going to find out exactly what happened, that this was an act of terror, and I also said that we're going to hunt down those who committed this crime.
Let's bring in NPR's diplomatic correspondent, Michelle Kelman. Michelle, did the president say that at the time, did he call it an act of terror?
Well, he did use the word terror in that Rose Garden statement the morning after the attack. He said, no acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation. But it's also true that his ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, several days later went on the Sunday talk shows and suggested that this attack grew out of a protest against an anti-Islam video. That appears now not to be the case. Republicans have been accusing President Obama and his administration of downplaying the terrorist threat and misleading Americans about this. President Obama came back very strongly today saying that the suggestion that anyone on his team would play politics when four Americans were killed is offensive.
That's NPR's diplomatic correspondent Michelle Kelman. Michelle, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And you can find more fact-checking and analysis overnight on our website, npr.org, and tomorrow, of course, on Morning Edition. Let's bring back our panelists. EJ, let me begin with you, EJ Dionne. A lot of this debate was really about litigating the past 4 years, and Romney really drew the president into that narrative. Was that effective in the end for him?
Well, I think that there are two things that happened this week that didn't happen last week. Obama actually defended his record for the last 4 years, and it was effective if you were open to that possibility, and obviously it didn't persuade any Republicans out there. But it was also about litigating Mitt Romney's views, and a great deal of this debate was about litigating Romney's views, and that's what Obama did not succeed at doing at all last week, and that's why I thought tonight was so important to Obama. And my fact check is that Romney didn't say he wouldn't cut taxes on the rich. He said he would keep their share of the total tax take the same. That's exactly what George W. Bush said in 2000 before he cut taxes on the rich a lot. And I think we're going to hear more about that very careful parsing over the next couple of days.
Matt Cotinetti, what did you think was missing from the debate tonight, the questions?
Oh, well, you know, we didn't have any questions on entitlement reform. The candidates brought that up themselves. I don't think I heard a question about the size of the national debt. The candidates brought that up themselves. We had to wait for the 47% to make an appearance until the very, very final question in exchange of the debate. And one can argue because, you know, this type of format is a town hall format. You're dealing with the questions you get. And, of course, we had a domestic policy debate at first. We're going to have a foreign policy debate next Monday. So one can quibble with this. But there wasn't a lot here, I think, on some of the issues, the ground that favors Romney. I will say, I mean, any time you're talking about Obama's record, it does not help Barack Obama. And there are Democrats who believe that. You know, Stan Greenberg has done focus group after focus group throughout this year trying to tell the Obama campaign that women independence, working-class whites, so women without a college degree, do not respond to the message that things are fine and we just need to do more of the same. And so that they could have received that message from the president tonight.
Let's go to Hofstra University to our Don Gagne there. Don, from your vantage point, I mean, watching from here, it appeared that this was one of those moments where you could really see how much these two men seem to dislike one another. Was that the sense you got watching it there?
You could feel tension. You could feel electricity. You could see Governor Romney kind of almost, you know, stammering. There were times when they literally, you know, back and forth, one two words at a time. So no, I think that was very clear, and they portrayed themselves with having, you know, very different policies and approaches from one another as well.
And Mara Liasson, obviously the stakes were very high. After the first debate, Mitt Romney really started to close the gap and in some cases has been outpolling the president in some key swing states. Was the White House surprised by the shift in polls after that first debate?
I think they were surprised at how much it shifted and also that it wasn't just a momentary bounce. It seemed to be a new trend. And the question for tonight is, did the president stop that, you know, as Matt suggested? I think the president turned in a good performance. What he didn't do in Denver was so profoundly important. That was kind of the place to do it if he was going to do it. He definitely was better tonight. But because he left what I consider to be a huge thing on the table, and that is his vision for the next 4 years, I wonder if that's going to be something that's going to come back to haunt him. And independent voters, we're told, don't like to see candidates arguing with each other. That's one of the reasons that the president held back so much in Denver, too much, as it turned out. So what are they going to think when they look at this? I am really interested in seeing the focus groups and the Insta polls from this, because I'd suspect it's going to be seen as a draw. Then the question is, who wins in a draw? The guy who's ahead. Who's ahead? Maybe it's Romney.
That was the last word to NPR's Mara Liasson. Thanks also to Ron Elving, E.J. Dionne, and Matt Cotinetti. You've been listening to special coverage of the second presidential debate at Hofstra University from NPR News. Check out our website, npr.org, and be sure to tune in tomorrow on Morning Edition for more. I'm Guy Raz, and thanks for listening.